as most of you know who've ever written anything or any papers or delivered any speeches, you know that the introduction to something like a sermon is supposed to grab people's attention and make them interested. Well, I don't have time for an introduction this week, so if you could all could just please just give me your attention, that would be great. Good? Okay. What I want to do is just kind of jump right into Egypt and the story of Israel in Egypt and what we see in Exodus 1. Now, some of you, whether because you've been in church your whole life or you've seen Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat, the musical, know how Joseph and the Israelites ended up in Egypt. But I'll give you a quick summary. Joseph was one of 12 sons of Jacob, also known as Israel, and his brothers were really jealous of him, and they sold him as a slave down to Egypt. Joseph, to make a long story short, by the power of God, saved Egypt while in Egypt, while he was there, from a huge famine. So he told the king, God told Joseph, and Joseph told the king, there's going to be a famine. And so they were able to prepare and gather all this food and store it all up. So when the famine came, they were prepared and they had tons of food that was available to them. Now, as you can imagine, the Egyptians were pretty grateful for this to Joseph. And they invited all of Joseph's family down. So all of his brothers came down. Joseph forgave them. And Israel, Joseph's father, they all came down to Egypt. And they were given a special place to live there. And Egyptian culture became a very conducive place for the Israelites. And as we see in verse 7, it says, the Israelites were fruitful and prolific. They multiplied and grew exceedingly strong so that the land was filled with them. Egypt was a very comfortable place for an Israelite to be an Israelite. But after about somewhere, scholars differ between about 215 and 430 years of the Israelites being in Egypt, something happened. Now a new king arose over Egypt who did not know Joseph. And in fact, he feared the Israelites because he saw how prolific they were, how many of them there were, how much power they were gaining. And all of a sudden, Egyptian culture started to turn on the Israelites. The Israelites lost their special place. People looked down upon them. Many of them were enslaved to the Egyptians. And now Egyptian culture had become a very uncomfortable place for an Israelite to be an Israelite. But as I read this story this week, I was struck by something. Not only in this period of comfort where Egyptian culture kind of coddled the Israelites, in this era, not only now did the king forget the special place of the Israelites in their history, but the Israelites themselves lost sight of who they were. So when Moses goes to the Israelites, it takes a whole lot of work to convince them that Yahweh God is someone who can be trusted and listened to. Now fast forward a number of centuries. Christians had a big hand in building Western civilization and culture. So European culture, North American, a lot of South American culture, Christians were kind of at the center of that, the driving force of that. The church had a very special place in the development of what we know as the United States and Europe and all of this. And this is a time that we call Christendom, when the church was kind of the driving force in our culture. And thus, Western civilization, and we're going to talk today specifically about American culture, became very conducive to the church. Churches were kind of at the center of every town and sometimes multiple of them. Pastors were respected. Christian stories were pretty well known around town. Christian terminology was used and understood. The church had a very special place in American culture and Western culture for a long, long time. America was, for a long time, a very comfortable place for a Christian to be a Christian. Increasingly, however, as many of you may sense, American culture has kind of become like the king who didn't know Joseph. We live in what many people call a post-Christendom era, where the church has kind of lost its special place. Now, it is still pretty comfortable to be a Christian in America compared to a lot of parts of the world. Okay, so don't get me wrong there. But the church has lost its special place. And many of us feel that by being in churches that are kind of fading and declining, both in members and in money and on all of these things. The era of where American culture coddled the church is pretty much over. It's been over in Europe for a long time, incidentally, but now it's kind of following that way in our American culture. Now, I couldn't have planned this any better. When I went to CNN.com this morning, there was an article, an opinion article, that was titled, "White Protestants' Time is Over." And it talked about how basically we've had, white Protestants have had every president in our nation's history, except for our present one, who is still Protestant, incidentally, and John F. Kennedy. We're the only non-white white male Protestant presidents we've had. And he said that time is kind of coming to an end in our culture, where white Protestants dominate the culture. I just thought it was fascinating how that worked out with what I'm talking about this morning. The king doesn't know Joseph. American culture, less and less, doesn't know or remember or really care about the special place that the church had in American culture for many, many years. But as in the story of Exodus, it's one thing for the culture to forget about the special place of the church. It's another thing for the church to lose sight of who we are as the people of God. And the biggest challenge facing us today as the church is not a culture who doesn't know us or really care that we have a special place in it. Our biggest problem is knowing exactly who we are as a church. And being many of our churches are ill-prepared to love and follow Jesus in a new kind of culture. That's our biggest problem. And so to kind of elaborate on this a little bit, I'm going to get out the old-school whiteboard, and we're going to do a quick kind of history lesson. I'm going to draw some pictures for you. And hopefully, not many people have moved up, and I guess that's okay. But just, you know, don't be upset if you can't see everything. This will be an interactive thing. What color should I use? Green, black, blue, or red? What do you think? Black. Okay, we'll go black. Dark so you can see. That's fine. And red pen, I hear, if teachers use red pen, it causes anxiety in their students. So we won't use red. that's okay. All right, so to kind of draw pictures of what I'm describing here, for many years, this was the culture. So here's the American culture, and here is the church. Okay, so church, American culture. And again, there's so much overlap. The church is kind of at the center of that culture in many ways, and the church is the place to be in Christendom. I mean, people just came to churches for all kinds of reasons, for spiritual reasons, but also for social reasons. Lots of social things go on, for entertainment purposes, concerts, and all kinds of things. People came to churches for a lot of reasons. And so there was this constant flow into our churches, and they were growing places. To kind of change the image to a fishing image, there was a constant flow of fish into the net of the church. Okay, so we're going to use that image a little bit. And what happened was that churches started to produce and form net menders. People who could mend that net, make sure there were no holes. Because there was this constant flow of people coming into the church, all the church had to do really was make sure they would stay once they got here. Okay? So as churches, we put lots of energy into things like our organizational efficiency and structures and make sure our business is all in line and programs and things like that that would make sure people stayed in the churches once they came in. And what I'm not saying is that not a lot of good spiritual things happened. Okay, disciples were made, mission was done in a lot of churches. But in this culture, it was very possible for churches to grow without doing much disciple making and without doing much mission, because people were just coming to the church anyway. So we just had to make sure they stayed, however that looked. Okay, the pastor took care of the spirituality. As long as everyone's coming to one place, you just need someone there who can share the gospel and talk about spiritual things and do that kind of thing. The rest of the church could focus on the net mending stuff. Again, using some of those organizational and business skills and programmatic skills, those types of things. And as long as we made sure we had no holes in our net, churches grew. But, as I said, we live in a new culture. And one of the characteristics of our new culture today, as probably a lot of you sense, is that we are a far more fragmented culture than the Christendom culture. There's a lot less that connects us and brings us, that we share. There's a lot less that we share. Just think of television for a moment. In 1960, how many television channels were there? Three? We'll go with three. Yeah, how about like 300 now, right? So if you were watching TV in 1960, you were connected in some way to at least a third of the people in this country who are watching TV. Now you might be connected with 1/300th of the people who are watching TV. There's just a lot less that connects us. We have so many options now. What we do is we cluster around the different things we like and enjoy and prefer. Okay? So the church is one of these, we'll say that. But then here you have people who, you know, like the Browns, for instance, and you cluster around people who like the Browns. And it's a sad fragment to be in, I can say, as a Browns fan myself, okay? Lions fans, okay, you can agree too, right? Or people who like science fiction, or people who like to golf, or people who are interested in motorcycles or old cars or things like that. And we kind of cluster around those type of people who like the same things that we like. And then you have, of course, religious people who like Jesus. And that's just another one of the fragments in the church. The church is no longer the place to be. Let's just say that. In our culture, the church is not the place to be. If I want entertainment, I'm not going to go to the church. I'm not going to go to a concert. I'm not going to go something at the church. I'm going to go to like a real concert at, you know, some big venue. Or I'm going to go to iTunes and I'm going to download music, the music that I like, incidentally. I'm not going to go to the church. If I want to do social things, I'm going to go to one of my fragments where people are gathering around things I like. I'm not going to go to the church. I don't have to go to the church, let's put it that way, for that. And many people are not going to church for those type of things. Meanwhile, the church is still putting lots of our energy into mending nets because we're good at it. You know, for lots of years, that's what we've done, and we're pretty good at it, and we keep doing it. Lots of energy going in there. But there are two problems. One problem is we have these big nets, but people aren't flooding into them, right? The fish aren't biting, so to speak. So the other problem is then we have less people to mend the nets, right? And so we have these huge nets, less people to mend them, and the people who are left to mend them are frustrated, one, because they have a lot of work to do, and two, because no one's coming into the net, okay? That's where many of our churches are, and that leads to frustration and fatigue. Now, we live in a new kind of culture. It stands to reason we would need a new kind of church. What we need is less net mending and more people who can cast the nets. I'm not saying we don't need net mending. We still need people who are good with business and organization and program stuff. What we need is more people who are able to cast the net. And that's okay because Jesus never called us to be net menders, first and foremost. He called us to be people fishers. When Jesus approaches Andrew and Simon, they're fishermen. And he says, follow me and I will make you fish for people. My translation of that is people fishers. Okay, that's what Jesus called us to be. Remember, for a lot of us who are really upset by some of these culture changes and the church's place in it, it is not the culture's job to bless the church. It is the church's job to bless the culture. That's what God has called the church to do, is to be blessers of the culture. So if the culture moves, if our target moves, then we need to move. That's our calling. It's not the culture's calling. And thus, we need to change. Our job and our calling in this new culture is not just to mend the nets and wait for people to come in, because they're not. Our job is to go into each of these fragments with the love of God and the light of Christ and the good news of Jesus and hope and joy and the kingdom of God. That's what we need. And you might even kind of replace the big net, because these are all small fragments. You don't need the big net. We need people who have, if I can draw it, you know, those smaller fishing nets to enter into those fragments and go fishing there. And people fish. We live in a new kind of culture. We need a new kind of church. This is hard because for many, many years, churches were designed to produce. We're kind of shifting the image to kind of like factory image. Churches were designed to produce net menders. We produced a lot of people who were good at business and organization and programs. And in that time, what happened was our people fishing muscles, changing the metaphor again, I guess. While we were working those net mending muscles, our people fishing muscles got a little out of shape. And that takes transition. To illustrate the difficulty of this, take the Jeep plant down the road. What would be required to transition the Jeep plant into a Boeing plant that produces airplanes? A lot, right? You need lots of different equipment. You need people who are trained in different types of tasks. A lot of things would have to change. It would be a very difficult transition to change a Jeep plant into a Boeing plant, producing automobiles to producing airplanes. And that is kind of the task facing the church. We need to less be producing net menders and more be producing people fishers. We're producing something really different than what we have been. What we need, what a people fisher requires, is not as much the business and the organizational skills. What people fishers need, what we need in a people fishing church, are strong disciples, people who can go into all of these fragments and still strongly be following Christ and know where they're going and what they're doing and who they are. And we also need creative missionaries, people who can go into all of these different places and find creative ways to love people and speak people's language while also speaking the gospel. Okay, that is a big difference in what we've been producing for lots of years. We need strong disciples and creative missionaries. We cannot rely on the pastor to be the one who knows and shares the gospel and to be the spiritual one in the congregation. For one, I can't go into all of these fragments that you're a part of. Your workplace, and that we talked about last week, and your clubs and whatever else you're in. I can't go into all of this. And secondly, if I did, people wouldn't care what I have to say. Because people don't care about pastors anymore, or care what pastors have to say anymore, generally in these fragments, unless you're in the church, of course. Okay, and only half of you really care what I have to say. So really, out in these fragments, no one does, okay? So the pastor can't be the one who is the disciple and the missionary for the church because of the different culture. Each of us must be able to live out the gospel and to share the gospel in each of the fragments that God has put us in. Again, think of the people that you spend time with, the groups that you spend time with, the places where you spend time. Those are your fragments. And there are probably more that God might call you to that you don't even know about right now. But each of us must be able to be a disciple and a missionary. And that's really what we were called to be all along. Again, people fishers, strong disciples, and creative missionaries. That's what a Christian is. Now, this is scary for a couple of reasons. One, because change and transition is scary. It just is. And I don't care how old or young you are, change is hard, transition can be scary. But also, it's scary because as a church, we can't get away with some of the things that we could get away with in this culture. We can't get away with not producing disciples and coming up with creative ways of being missionaries in these fragments. It requires more of each and every person in the pew and a pastor, really. It requires more of us to be a people fisher than a net mender. Jesus says, "Follow me, and I will make you people fishers." That's what Jesus wants to make us. That's what he wants to produce in churches, is people fishers. What does that mean? First of all, it means as a church, we need to put less energy into the net mending, more energy into creating disciples, people who know Jesus, who are following Jesus, who have an idea of what the kingdom of God is, people who can express what the kingdom of God is to other people. How many of you feel like you could really do that? If you had someone, and I'm not asking for you to raise your hand, but if you had someone who didn't know Jesus or what the kingdom of God is, how many of you feel like you could really explain what that is to them? That's what we need to put our energy into, is equipping people who can do that, who can live the kingdom, and who can share about the kingdom with others. That's where our energy needs to go as a church. As individuals, what does that mean? It means that many of us need to drop our nets and join in this process, join in this movement. Because Jesus, as he comes to the disciples, these people who are fishermen, they're doing their work, he doesn't come up to them and say, "Hey, I see you guys are busy, and I know you have a long work day ahead of you. Let's try and come up with a time where our schedules, we can find about a half hour to talk." He says, "Follow me. I will make you people fishers." And it says, and immediately, they left their nets and followed him. Jesus is rather uncompromising in this. He says, your first purpose, if you want to follow me, I'm not waiting around. Drop your nets and follow. And for a lot of us, we got to think of, what are our nets? What are the things that we're so busy on, that are so central to our lives, that we have trouble to find time to follow Jesus and to become this disciple and to become this missionary to our world? It's harder on this path, this transition, this change path. What we need is to be there for each other. We need to be there, to be here together. It has to be done together. And as we are going to talk about our vision statement, our new-ish, in-process vision statement this fall, the basic line of that is, we are striving to live the gospel life together. It is not something we can do alone. It is not something we can do when we're here one week and gone for a month. It's something where we need to be together in it. And because today is Rally Day, I want to specifically challenge some of our parents who are here today. The question for parents is, do your kids see God and see the church as a fragment, just another little fragment in your life? Or do they see it as the center of your life, what you're all about? Do they see Jesus and the church as the center of what you're all about? Because we have a few kids here today. We have a small children's ministry here. And that's important for us to explore. But the key that I want to say to parents who are here today is that it's hard for kids and teachers when there are only one or two kids here per week. Kids don't want to be the only one here. And what we have when it's only once a month thing, we have one kid this week, and two kids this week, and no kids this week, and one kid this week. And that doesn't build any momentum. What we need is to be here all the time, every week, 45 weeks out of the year. That's not every week, but it's most of them. And here's what happens. If you're here every week, and this goes, I'm talking to parents, but this goes really for everyone. Here's what happens if you're here every week. First of all, you show your kids that God and the community of God's people is important. It's not a fragment. If the church loses out to practice and rehearsal and schoolwork even, time after time, that says something. That says something to the kid, that all of those things are more important than the church. So, if you're here regularly and this takes priority over some of those things, sometimes at least, that shows your kid that God is important, the church is important. Secondly, other kids and parents know they're not alone. So when we have a family that shows up and visits, there are other people here that they know, okay, I'm not alone in this. There are other families here. And there are just too many weeks where we have a family that comes in, and I'll be like, well, we have families. They're just not here today. Believe me, you know, take my word for it kind of thing. If you're here every week, you know, people see that. People see that there are other families, that there are people who are trying to live this life together, who are trying to fight against some of the momentum of the culture and say, no, the church is important, Jesus is important. People see that and are encouraged in that. Third, our teachers, who put a lot of time preparing and have lots of gifts, get to use those gifts. And they get to pour into your kids' lives and make disciples and love them and serve them and help grow that fruit of the Spirit in them. That's something that happens if you're here regularly. And fourth, you become more like Jesus when you're with the people of God and seeking Him out. And you can be, and being more like Jesus can only make you a better parent. That's what happens when we're here together, for all of us to be people, to be the people fishers that Jesus called. We need to be together. We need weekly worship. We need a focus group kind of community. We need a disciplined walk with Jesus, where we are seeking Him out daily on a daily basis throughout the week. We need for Jesus and the church to be more than just one of the other fragments in our lives. I need weekly worship. I need a focus group. I need a disciplined walk with the Lord. I need the church to be more than just my job and that fragment of my life. I need it to be the core. I need Jesus to be the core of who I am and everything I do. We need to be together. Let me finish by saying this. In our culture, we are not facing anything that the early church didn't face. The early church was in a culture that didn't know about the church. Most of them didn't really know anything about Jesus either. They didn't have models and programs, organizations, and not a whole lot of money. And Jesus didn't teach them that stuff. He didn't say, here's how you should organize your church. All they knew was that they were called to live the gospel life together. And so in Acts 2, it says they devoted themselves to the apostles' teaching and to fellowship, to being together, to the breaking of the bread, and to prayers. And it says, and daily they went to the temple together and they broke bread in their homes. That's all they knew. I don't know what we're supposed to do. We're supposed to live the gospel life together. And this, our culture right now, the kind of culture we live in, that doesn't know Joseph, is the kind of culture where God does His most amazing work. What happened in Egypt when the king didn't know Joseph? God comes in and delivers His people out of slavery and parts the Red Sea in front of them and invites them and delivers them into the Promised Land. That's what happens. They get to see God move in huge, unprecedented ways. What happens in the early church when in a culture that doesn't have a special place for the church and doesn't know Jesus? It says God added to their number daily those who were being saved, those who were coming into this church and wanting to follow Jesus. It happened on a daily basis, and sometimes it happened at a time. The question is, are we ready to drop our nets and follow Jesus and let Him make us into the people fishers that we were created to be?